Redacted Media and GhostHead.net present The Film Illogical Society. On today's episode, we continue our countdown of the BBC's 100 Greatest Comedies of All Time. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Scholes and Chad Halverson.
And welcome back once again to the Filmological Society, where we are doing the countdown show, where we are counting down the top 100 comedies of all time, as determined by the BBC of all entities. As you heard from our pleasant announcer, I am Chris Scholes, and with me as always is...
Chad Lawrence Halverson. Don't forget it.
Yes, Larry.
Larry.
All right, so today's movie was a first for me in many ways, and I'll explain that as we get into it, though. It was What's Up, Doc?, a Warner Brothers comedy romp starring Barbra Streisand, Ryan O'Neal, and... I can't believe this was her first film performance.
Was it?
Madeline Kahn.
Nice. She had a pretty big role for, like, first time out.
I mean, I'm guessing she had a lot of stage cred.
Well, yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, she was a pretty big player in the film. Like, her character is pretty key. So, not to say that she wasn't good enough to, you know, be in that position. But, you know, especially being... a woman in the 70s, I'm sure it was super hard to get to that point. So I'm just shocked that that was her first performance because she did really well.
She did.
I love Madeline Kahn.
She did. Some other stars of this film and What's Up, Doc? And we'll get into what it was in a little bit, but just very interesting. Not only was Higgins in this film, Higgins from Magnum P.I., but mm-hmm. you also had Boss Bailey from Dukes of Hazzard was in this film.
Randy Quaid.
And Randy Quaid, the less good-looking Quaid brother, the less sane Quaid brother, the unemployed Quaid brother, Randy Quaid was in this, yes. Very interesting cast.
Liam Dunn was in this, and he was in a couple of, like he was the preacher in Blazing Saddles.
Oh yeah, he was a very big comedic presence at least.
Yeah.
All right, so What's Up, Doc? You know, it very clearly is a Warner Brothers film because...
Gee, I wonder why.
What's Up, Doc? Is the famous line from Bugs Bunny, and actually we are basically introduced to Barbra Streisand's character as she's chewing on a carrot and says, yep. What's up, Doc? So, very much. So, besides that, Chad, would you like to explain the basic plot of this film?
Sure. So... Howard Bannister is this scientist, and he's coming to San Francisco.
Let me just stop you. He's a musicologist.
Oh, sorry.
Musicologist. Get it right.
Sorry.
It's a very specific science. Very specific science.
So he's a musicologist from Iowa.
Yes.
And he comes to San Francisco with his fiance, who's played by...
Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn, thank you. And, you know, he's supposed to, he's like very yes, no, like he's very robotic. He's obviously super stiff. He, you know, has a bossy fiance and obviously meh, you know, you can tell that like, yeah, he's super smart, but also he's kind of shallow. They're not shallow, like nothing's inside of him. Like he's not his own person. So... then all of a sudden you have Judy Maxwell, Barbra Streisand's character, just for no reason other than all, like a literal Bugs Bunny cartoon, somebody walks past Bugs Bunny and Bugs Bunny's like, I'm going to mess with that person. Like, that's immediately what she does. She follows him to the drugstore, starts antagonizing him, and then one thing leads to another, and she ends up at this conference dinner saying that she's his fiance, and she, you know, she's so convincing and so charming and smart that nobody can see that it's a facade. And as time goes on, she kind of loosens Howard up. And by the end of it, or by the third act, they're like in a a rickshaw with four different cases. Oh yeah, by the way, there's the B plot is there's these four bags. They're all the same. There's a character within kind of like this ensemble. Each character has a bag with specific things in it. Judy had a bag. Howard had a bag. This rich old lady had a bag, and then another gentleman had it, and it was just like a travel case. And everything gets mixed up. They end up with all the bags, and now they're riding through San Francisco, being chased by the three other parties that want their specific bag. They go through Chinatown. They end up at Fisherman's Wharf. Is that Fisherman's Wharf?
Yeah. We'll say yes.
Yes, I know San Francisco.
Someone can correct us on that.
Yeah. And, I mean, by the end, like, Howard is really his own person. He kind of, you know, speaks for himself at the end, and he ends up getting the grant that he wanted for, you know, his specific musicology experiment, and they end up getting together at the end. It's formulaic, but, I mean, there are definitely worse formulaic comedic movies that are like this.
Yeah, and it was made as an homage to the films of the 30s, so it was following that formula, as a rule, basically, to make I think they were tired of the comedies that were coming from the late 60s, early 70s. Let's go look back at a classic era of comedy, crazy films that really have razor thin plot lines.
And, yeah, very, very razor thin.
Yeah, and just kind of go. And the four bags, just to be fair, because the bags did look alike, and but one bag had jewels.
Yep.
One bag had government papers.
Mm-hmm.
One bag had clothes and a dictionary.
That was Judy's bag.
Yep. And one bag had rocks.
And that was Howard's.
So you can tell that not everybody has, you know, can easily tell things by weight. It's all visual. And that makes sense in a visual medium as a film. That, you know, the bag of rocks would weigh as much as the paper.
I didn't even think of that.
So, you know, that lost me right now. I mean, like, okay, so this was directed by Peter Bogdanovich.
Bogdanovich.
So I know he's done a lot of those 70s comedies. Written by Buck Henry, one of the best names of all time, and David Newman. So this was a first for me as far as a first Barbara Streisand film.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I can't say that I have seen a lot of her work, and honestly, most of my life, I've grown up kind of annoyed by her and a little bit confused as why people like her so much.
I think at this point, it's like legacy. I mean, she was a triple threat? She could sing, she could act, yeah, and she could dance. So, I mean, not that nobody else could do that, but back in the day, she had the chops.
Oh yeah,
she was attractive. You know, I don't know. I was the same way. Like, I grew up like way later in her career, and I just remember like people calling her Babs, and you know, she'd have HBO specials, and she would only sing certain times. And I was actually shocked that the first time, I know she sings the first song, but like on camera, the first time she sang was at like 55 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I assumed they were going to be singing the whole time.
Well, and she seems to be big, like she's huge on, especially the East Coast, I think. Like,
yeah.
New York, she is a huge star. She still is. Because I remember like Saturday Night Live, like, she was a big deal for some of the, like, if you watch some of the Mike Myers shows and stuff like that, like, you know, when he played his aunt or whatever, Barbara Streisand was the biggest star in their world. So,
yeah.
So as far as a performance from her, I have to say I was surprised. I actually, I didn't understand at first, like, why is she bothering this guy? But like you said, it was she was Bugs Bunny. She was Bugs Bunny.
The plot, you said thin plot. Yeah. Like, it doesn't need much for her to be Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny is always Bugs Bunny.
Right.
You know?
Right. And she saw this guy. She's like, I like him. I'm going to go.
I mean, just to delve right in, it's like, it wasn't just that, oh, hey, there's a guy. I'm going to go torture him. She saw that he was a little uptight because she was in the hotel lobby.
Yeah.
And then she kind of, like, picked up on it. So it's not like she just randomly stalked the right person. But, yeah, she noticed that he was being not demasculated. He's just a pushover. There's plenty of people that are pushovers, well, male or female.
I mean, let's be honest. You know, the study of musicology is not an easy one. To be a musicologist, just at Iowa, it's a pretty big deal, and so I understand why he was so uptight. Actually, I was a little annoyed by musicologist. I mean, I know they wanted to make something ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I'm like, oh, that wasn't even, like, trying, especially when you have Barbara Streisand.
I feel like the movie was fairly well written for what it was, and, yeah, musicologist is kind of like, oh, man, you know, we wrote 99% of the script, but what do we call them, you know? Yeah. Musicologist. It'll work.
Science for music.
Yeah.
So I thought the story was fun. It reminded me a little bit of the second Jerry Lewis movie that we watched. As far as it being very a thin plot, and you had...
Very slapstick,
and you had... definitely different sets, and there's going to be different action in each one. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't a dollhouse like it was for that film.
But it was like, it was a hallway for most of it.
It was a hallway for most of it. But the chase scene was well done.
Yeah. And I mean, I was thinking about it too, even back in the day, and there's plenty of other things that have been shot in San Francisco, but that's a hard city to shoot a chase scene in.
Oh yeah. I mean, and it's
dangerous.
And they did damage to some of the city property there because they took cars down stairwells and things like that, mm-hmm. that they weren't supposed to. And they did some damage that the studio had to pay for. Because they never asked permission to do it. So
it was the 70s, man.
Just do whatever. But yeah, I can't imagine like that. There were car chase film scenes in San Francisco before this film.
I mean, this was the prime, though. Like, this is 71, 72, where, like, car chase scenes with, like, you know, big American muscle cars were, like, everywhere. So it made sense that it had a car chase scene like that.
Yeah, a little parody of today's films. And, yeah, San Francisco with its up and down hills and its windy, windy roads, that can't be easy to set up, to film, to do any of that. That I have to think that would be a logistical nightmare to do.
Yeah. Can I talk about my favorite, like, just joke? And it's not even a joke, but it was a visual.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when Howard's in his room and Eunice is trying to get in, and he's, like, freaking out because he's trying to get...
Judy.
Get rid of Judy. Yeah, so he puts her out on, like, just the ledge outside of the window. You know, a bunch of things happen, and all of a sudden, like, he tries to turn the TV off, so he pulls the cable plug out of the outlet, and it starts a fire. And then it brings more people into the situation, brings somebody from the outside. It just brings in all these people, and, like, they're trying to put out a fire with, like, a little ice bucket. They start throwing rags at it, like... all the things you're not supposed to do with a fire, they were doing as a collective group. And it was before it, like, faded to black and went to, you know, the next scene. But I don't know, just that moment, it was a simple frame, but just, like, all those people, like, oh, I'm going to help. And they just make it worse.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was funny. Especially since you had some, you know, you had some people that worked at the hotel that were there. You had people in the rooms next door that were there, and everyone trying to help and no one's helping. And Howard is completely oblivious to everything going on because he's just worried about Eunice seeing that Judy was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as far as mixing in such a large cast, you know, so you have your primary focus on Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal's characters. Right? Yeah. That's the main focus. But as far as mixing everyone else in and just giving everyone kind of their own story, I thought was very well done.
It was like, it was, I don't know, every TV show is an A and B plot. But in this case, the B plots were smaller.
Yeah.
Or like the A plot was your big one. And these were just like interwoven. And it's a super simple story to follow. So it's not hard, but it works. Like, just because you write a simple story, you know, you still have to have substance to it. And they would, you know, if they didn't show it visually by like passing something off, you know, they would show it in the frame. They play it like, and they did a lot of cool things that comedies normally never do. They played with the camera a little bit. It wasn't crazy. It wasn't like an Edgar Wright film or anything, but it was shot specifically to help the comedy instead of it, you know, just being like A shot, B shot, punchline, you know, like when Howard went down the escalator as one of the guy with the golf clubs, the government agent came up the stairs, you know, looking for that. He's going to be looking for that bag, but then it went down and went up, and I don't know. It sets everything up very nicely for when they finally do all kind of meet, or all points lead to, hey, these bags are all look the same and none of us have the right ones, and there's just a mad scramble. It makes sense, and you want to keep watching because it wasn't just one of those things where they threw it together at the end. Like, everything you've been watching has built up to this point, so now third act is chase scene. So
right,
it was well executed. The DP and, you know, the visuals were all great. The comedy was solid. It's dated, but I mean, you can't help it. But I don't know. It was like a live action Bugs Bunny cartoon in an hour and a half.
It was.
It's literally what it is.
And it's a great introduction to a, you know, to a Barbara Streisand film too. So yeah, I think we both enjoyed this film. I was surprised. I mean, I was a little like, oh, okay, Barbara Streisand. Okay, let's see. I've not seen any film, so I'll give it a chance. And I was happy with it. It ended up being the third top grossing film for 1972 when it came out. So, you know, we're not talking blockbuster money here, but it made its you know, it had a budget of $4 million. And it grossed 66. So, if I'm Warner Brothers, I'm not complaining about that at all.
Not at all.
That's a $62 million profit right there. But yeah, kind of going back to those storylines that we were talking about, like, it was very nice to see Madeline Kahn's character, actually, the one who could have some anger or whatever in her because her fiancé is falling for this other woman that just showed up and started talking to him. She's missing out on all this stuff, but she ends up in a relationship that she would like more as well. So, like, everyone comes out winners at the end of it.
Yeah, you don't really feel bad for anybody because everybody got what they ultimately wanted. No matter, I mean, technically, Howard cheated on Eunice.
Yes.
But
she found somebody with a lot more money who would just, you know, give whatever she wants.
Yeah, she wanted to be like an adult mother.
Yes. Well, and so one thing I found very interesting, and I think it's one of those time and place type of things, but 1972, I wouldn't think that a couple who are engaged would be in separate rooms in a hotel.
I think they only did that for both their characters.
Yes, like, it works. Yeah. It works because of the film says it does.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
You know, the film make, you know, it has to do that for the jokes to work.
But hey, man, like, not everybody in the 70s was, you know, cocaine snorting, discotheque going party animal. Like, you still had geeks and, you know.
No, you didn't. Everyone was hippies. Everyone, it was free love. Everyone
were
had
dead
it.
By 71, man.
Well, I know, but these are people a little bit older. So they were hippies, and then they grew up to be yuppies.
I mean, Barbara Streisand's character, she would be a woman that would not have a separate bedroom from her fiancé.
No, no, or from a boyfriend, or from a guy she just met.
Although, I will say, up until maybe, like, a half a year before we got married, when we would, like, stay at my mom's house, you know, my mom and stepdad wouldn't let Kate and I sleep in the same room.
Oh, my parents were similar, for the most part. Yeah, I mean, okay, I wouldn't have traveled and gotten two rooms, though, because that costs money.
I mean, yeah.
And when it comes down to it, that's the more important thing here, right?
Yeah, relationship be damned.
Right, that's money.
Yeah, it's we're pissing away money. And they had rooms right next door to each other. You're right, that was a complete waste of money. Probably would have saved a lot of headache.
Oh, yeah, that would have solved, the movie would have been like 5 minutes long then.
Yeah, like resolution almost immediately. Wow, what a dumb movie.
yeah, so you know, and it was just really fun to see a lot of these character, you know, a lot of these actors who are in a lot of the films I think we both grew up watching, like a lot of the Mel Brooks films.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you see a lot of them in there, or seeing Boss Bailey in there, when I didn't know he did anything except for Dukes of Hazzard. I figured he probably did, but I didn't know that because I hadn't seen him in anything. So, yeah, who knew he was an actor before Dukes of Hazzard? But yeah, so it's, I would say, you know, if you're looking for a film,
this is,
yeah, I mean, if you don't want to think, if you just kind of want to relax, put on a film that will entertain you, it's not much of a plot, there's not much character development.
This is the Space Jam for adults. Except it's, without any basketball.
It's the Space Jam of Barbra Streisand movies.
She did really well. Like, I'd be curious to watch more stuff with her. She's got a great voice, but
yeah,
I guess I do have like a preconceived notion about her. Or, you know, maybe I should give her more of a shot. But I don't know. I feel like there's so many like better triple threat female actors out there now I could pay attention to.
Well, and, yeah, and she probably, well, I'm not going to say probably, but she represented that role in the 70s. I mean, yeah. There were others as well, but, you know, name a bigger actress to come out of the 70s than she did as far as being that triple threat.
Yeah, with all the talents.
Yeah.
You know, I will say, I technically saw Meet the Fockers, and she was in that.
Oh, see, I never saw that because I didn't think they should do a follow-up to the first one.
Oh, they shouldn't have. It was bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a Sunday and there was nothing else on.
I don't know if I can accept that.
I'm actually convinced I saw it in the theater, so.
Oh.
Yeah, which is worse.
Oh.
I was working at the theater, though, so it was free.
Okay, management is going to have to take this under consideration.
We had to check the reels. Like, you had to watch the shitty movies.
We're going to get back to you.
Check the splices.
We're going to go back to you. I'm sorry. Management has to talk. It's just the way it is. But yeah, anyway, would you recommend this film, Chad?
Yeah, I think it's solidly funny. It's it's a lot of those, you know, like the fast talking comedies where you really, what am I trying to equate it to? Something I've been watching too. It's like the comedies where, like Arrested Development, like everything is literal, or BoJack Horseman, like everything is literal, everything has a purpose, and one thing can mean three different things. So I always tend to like those comedies because I feel like they're really smart and very well written, and this is a very good example of it.
Yeah, I mean they're well written comedies, but to watch and understand them, it doesn't take, you know, it's not highbrow humor. Of it is a little bit more, but it's not bawdy. I mean, it's a G-rated film now. I mean, it's a very safe comedy in many ways, but it's very whimsical. It's very fun. And again, the chase scene is probably worth watching it.
Yeah, and if you're holding out for a Barbara Streisand, Ryan O'Neal, like, rated X sex scene, nah.
Yeah.
It's like a kiss, and then they pan to a guy with a bucket of paint, and he drops something in it, and it's like, wah, 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 and then we cut.
Yep.
So it's safe for the kids.
All right, so any other thoughts on What's Up, Doc?
Not this one, but I'm going to pull up our list just because I'm curious to see what's next.
Your next film is also out of the 70s, 1971, Ooh. A New Leaf, directed by Elaine May. So,
A New Leaf.
So we have, I believe, our first female director.
What happened to the old leaf? Am I right?
Well, maybe that's what we'll find out. I mean, I don't want to.
Bet you the director never heard that joke before.
Probably not.
A New Leaf. Elaine May. Walter Matthau's in it.
Yeah,
right.
Walter Matthau. So one Golden Globe for Best Motion Picture.
Ooh, Doris Roberts. Wasn't she...
Raymond's dad?
Raymond's mom.
Or mom? Eh. Well, whichever. Peter dead. Peter Boyle. Whatever.
Peter Boyle, Doris Roberts, they're both dead. It's fine.
So that's what we'll be watching next is A New Leaf. Again, our first, I believe our first female director.
And she stars in it.
Yeah, and she's also in it. So,
dang.
Yeah, it's impressive to be on any top 100 list, being taking on more than one role. So I'm interested to see how Elaine May does.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, we really haven't hated, like, mortally hated anything that's been on this list, so I can't imagine. And I don't go in to any of these with, like, a preconceived notion. Like, I just,
I do. I think I'm going to hate it.
No, you can't do that. No, I'm joking. No.
I want this podcast to be a, you know, top 100 comedy podcasts of all time. On a BBC list someday.
Oh man, wouldn't that be great?
Oh man!
Oh man! Think about how long it would take to listen to that list because you're going down the list, and now you got to listen to all the episodes of each thing that are on that list.
Well, that's why we're not doing that. We're watching movies. Someone else will have to review all the top 100 podcasts of all time.
Oh God!
Yeah.
That poor person.
Well, you know, it's not us, so who cares?
Yeah, I recommend this film. I mean, just like anything off this list, I don't think this list is the end-all, be-all list to whatever.
No.
But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably like comedies. And if you haven't seen this comedy and it's on a list, it might be worth spending an afternoon watching. And that's the thing with comedy. You can't tell me you can't watch a comedy because they're always, like, 9 times out of 10, an hour and a half. You can dedicate an hour and a half to a comedy.
Yeah, I mean, these aren't epic films.
Yeah, this isn't Homer's quest.
No.
To buy the thing from Mr. Burns. I don't know literature. I'm sorry.
So I'm gonna throw this question on you now, because now we're at 91. So we've reviewed 11 films so far. About a tenth of the list because there's a tie for 100.
Yeah, that's right.
So out of the films that we've watched so far, what would you say your top three are? I think I know one. Yeah.
I would say, and only because, and it's not like these other movies aren't good.
Right.
Like,
right.
They're no definitely.
Yep, they're all good.
They're classics, but like, I gotta go with what I know. And Ghostbusters, Rushmore, and South Park. I probably put Rushmore under South Park. South Park at number two, Ghostbusters at number one.
I'm gonna say no order, but Ghostbusters, The Jerk, and I, you know, the more we talked about it, the more I liked it. The Exterminating Angel.
That's a weird one.
It is a weird one, but the more we talked about it, the more I think we both liked it. So. That's a good one for people to listen to again.
Yeah, I.
But Rushmore is right up there for me as well, so it's a good
love
list.
Love Rushmore.
So, all right. So, any other thoughts about this week's episode or next week's episode?
No, nothing comes to mind. I can't wait to watch A New Leaf by Elaine May, 1971.
The only thought I have is that Lord loves a working man. Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it. Thank you, everybody.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hat Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthat.net.